All right, listen, there's plenty on tap to talk about today, but one of the first dipper here, I'm going to go ahead and be controversial and say there's a time and a place for women to serve, and there's a time and a place for men to serve by themselves. And that's okay. That is not a slight of women. That is saying there will be times when the needs of the mission may dictate, you know, AKA, look what I went through. So in my role in Afghanistan, it was remote. It was in a weird environment. It was what the Army called austere. You heard me talk about it in my monologue. We literally lived among the Afghan people. For us to come in there, I mean, there were times when I had to assert myself and say, that's not the way we're going to do business because we're Americans and we're different. But for the most part, I tried not to ruin the cultural advantage of identifying with my counterparts. You know, when I'm trying to make inroads with the local warlord in Kunduz province, Afghanistan, at the beginning of the war, the last thing I need to do is offend him because I drag a woman into the meeting and it sets everything back. I mean, there's nothing responsible about that. Special forces, when they go to the Q course, when special forces go to the special forces qualification course to be Green Berets, the final exercise they go through is called the Robin Sage exercise. And in Robin Sage, they spend a lot of their time working on how to develop, and they have a role playing. I mean, they have people that are actors that play the roles of what are known as the G forces, the guerrilla forces. And so the guys who are training to be Green Berets, everybody thinks of Green Berets as being like SEAL Team 6. They're not. They are. They're capable of direct action. But Green Berets' original mission, and much of Special Operations' original missions, are to be able to go in and to work with the indigenous forces and to create a bridge to the cultural barriers and then to create a fighting force behind the enemy lines. It is said that one 12-man Special Forces team should be able to create a battalion-sized element of fighters. That being said, you don't get a lot of ground gained if you go in there and start offending them. So in my case in Afghanistan, I made it real clear. If you send a woman out here to this area, it's not going to go well. What do? They sent two. I could tell you some stories. I heard about them after the fact because I mean, my team, we pulled out, that team backfilled us. You know, there we were living among the Afghan people. They came in to replace us, and next thing you know, they're facing setbacks. And they literally had to start leaving the women back at the safe house because they couldn't get some of the stuff done they had to get done. It was asinine. Now, I am not saying that the women couldn't survive, they couldn't fight if need be. They certainly had some skills. I know they did. But their presence in the mission was not mission-oriented. It was political. That's all it was. Well, so what Pete Hegseth just did was he took the stance that there will be times when the combat arms, and again, the combat arms, there's no slight of anybody. This is the way it's set up. You have combat service support. You have combat support, like your logistics and all of that. And then you have combat arms in the Army. I'm just talking about Army. And the combat arms branches are the direct line warfighters. In other words, you signed up, you know, not to be a mechanic, not to be a cook, not to be a JAG officer, not to be a medical officer. You signed up to be a warfighter. So you're going to be infantry or armor or artillery or air defense artillery or combat engineers like sappers or combat aviation or special forces. And there's a reason why you train people to be the frontline warfighters. And what Pete Hegseth is saying is, perhaps it's time for us to consider not just that women have been given an opportunity now to serve in those places that were always designated just for men, because they were, until recent years. But now what he's saying is, that's fine. But I, as a Secretary of Defense, recognize that there will be time, because he was one. He was an infantry officer. He said, I, as Secretary of Defense, recognize that there will be a time and a place where the standards must be met equally, not equivalently. In other words, if you have to be able to carry 60 pounds of equipment on your back, then you just have to be able to carry 60 pounds of equipment on your back. And so in training, if you're going to say it's a 60-pound pack or rucksack for a 10K road march in a certain amount of time, it's the same standard for men and women. Now, some will say it already has been. No, not always. It's not always. You got to be able to make sure that it's both mission-oriented and that the standards are equal for the combat arms is what he's saying. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I'm going to give you some of the legal basis upon which I think he can rely, because I believe that there's going to soon enough be a challenge. I mean, like I said, the left wants you to believe that women can be men, but they don't want real women to be held to men's standards. That's, I mean, come on. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right. So we got a lot to talk about on this situation with Hegseth. And by the way, I got more than just that on the defense side. All right. We're going to talk about strong defense in a variety of capacities. But let's not overlook the fact that this, I don't think it's getting a lot of media time, but I think it's going to have monumental effects. In fact, let me say this. This is what Pete Hegseth, Secretary Hegseth, said himself. All right. With regards to the idea of having one single standard for men and women serving in combat roles, he said, for far too long, we've allowed standards to slip and different standards from men and women in combat arms, MOSs, and jobs, and that's not acceptable. He said, we need to have the same standards, male or female, in our combat roles to ensure that our men and women who are under our leaders and in those formations have the best possible leaders and the highest possible standards that are not based at all on your sex. And then he said, I'm directing the secretaries of the various military departments to develop comprehensive plans to distinguish combat arms occupations from non-combat arms occupations. All right, what does that mean? What it's saying is there may wind up being a tougher standard, and there should be, for someone who wants to be in the airborne infantry as opposed to someone who is going to serve as a dental hygienist in the military. And nothing against either job. What I'm saying is one is far more physically demanding and requires things of the individual that the other might not. So Hegseth is saying this effort will ensure that our standards are clear, mission-focused, and reflective of the unique physical demands placed on our service members in their various roles. So he's calling for what he calls heightened entry-level and sustained physical fitness standards. Interesting. He says, I mean, very in his memo, he actually says, all entry-level and sustained physical fitness requirements within the combat arms must be sex-neutral, based solely on the operational demands of the occupation and the readiness needed to confront any adversary. All right. So is he going to get legally challenged? Probably. Which is also ironic, by the way. Think about this. How ironic the fact that you've got an entire leftist woke, you know, community that will demand that we believe that a woman can be a man when she changes her mind. Certainly. Why not? Gender fluidity. It's all good. But then if we start saying, all right, we're going to have one standard, men and women, period. Wait, you can't do that. Of course we can. I thought you said it didn't matter. Well, here's the thing. The legal standard, and I've talked about it before, but I'm going to go from being Colonel Phil to Lawyer Phil just for a minute. What I really believe that is going to be to the Secretary of Defense's benefit is a legal argument for what is known as a bona fide occupational qualification. If you want to amaze your friends at the next water cooler conversation, sling this at them. Tell them, well, you know. I mean, how's Hegseth going to do this? Well, you know, it is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Allows for what's called a BFOQ, a bona fide occupational qualification. That means that whereas we're typically not allowed to discriminate in our hiring or you know, promotional capability in a job based on things like, I don't know, gender, pregnancy, age, demographics, like, you know, your skin color, you're typically not allowed to. But, you can look at the job and go, that job can only be done by somebody who has these characteristics. So whereas you can't discriminate against somebody because they're handicapped for most jobs, you can if they want to be a fireman or if they want to be an airborne ranger. I'm sorry, sir, I apologize, but you're in a wheelchair. There's no way you can be an airborne ranger. It's just it's our bona fide occupational qualification. You have to be able to be on your feet and carrying a 60-pound rucksack and another, you know, 40 pounds of combat equipment while wearing body armor. And, oh, by the way, another, you know, 45 pounds of parachute and reserve chute. And you have to be able to do all these things. Anyway, the bottom line is this. Bona fide occupational qualification. That's exactly what he's doing. He's saying, hey, you can be in the infantry, but you can only be in the infantry if you can do X and so. Hey, you can go to Ranger school, but only if you do it like X and so, which is going to set a standard, which is going to mean that the BFOQs under the Civil Rights Act, oh no, by the way, on the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, both of them, the Civil Rights Act of 64, the ADEA, the Age Discrimination Act of 67, I believe it is, those two federal laws allow for you to set a different standard you would not normally be allowed to set. And the military is one of the classic uses of BFOQs. How many people out there, well, like me, I wanted to be an aviator at first. I mean, I did. I wanted to fly helicopters. Wasn't going to happen with my eyesight. I've since had my eyes corrected. But when it all started, I became an infantry officer because I still could. I'm never going to, fly. I've known guys who were challenged on being a Navy SEAL because they were colorblind. Didn't mean they weren't studs. It meant that they were colorblind, and you couldn't be colorblind and be a SEAL. There are BFOQs. So, end result is this. This standard is going into effect. It's unclear, according to military.com, who hates anything conservative. By the way, military.com, what a rag. But I do go there. Phil, did you go to military.com? I did. But military.com is, they're concerned about the sweeping review of military fitness standards. But before the Pentagon could tighten requirements, there has to be clarity. Okay. Well, I understand that. But then they go into all the hand-wringing. This is a hand-wringing article. At the center of the push is a familiar talking point, gender-neutral fitness. Okay, what's your point? Well, the bottom line is this. We got to do it. You know why? Because we want a lethal fighting force. And we need to know that everybody in that foxhole has the ability to do everything that everybody else can do in that foxhole. Enough said on that. Hey, we're going to get back from this break here momentarily, and I'm going to tell you, I got some stuff on here you might want to know about. What did Tommy Tuberville say about the military service academies like West Point and Annapolis? What did Pete Hegseth say about his trip to Japan recently and how that factors into the deterrence with China? And then what are we looking at in terms of our southern border and how that, implicates things for national defense? All this stuff is coming up here momentarily. All of it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live, but not in the Right Side studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to the middle of the week, hour number two. We're going to get you all the way to go home time come a Friday. Y'all stand by for that. Hey, by the way, I will go ahead and announce to you in advance that a part of the reason why I'm not sitting in the studio is I am en route to a destination for meetings that I think are going to be potentially very impactful for Right Side Media. Can't announce what it's about, but just glad to say that things are happening and we're growing and things are going good. But that being said, tomorrow, Yaffe will be joining the JP, running the show themselves. And so, JP, you will have the con tomorrow.
I appreciate the confidence. I won't let you down.
Maybe that's what con stands for. Maybe it's con. I think it stands for control. Either way, it works. Anyway, that'll be tomorrow, and I'm glad that I've got such amazing folks to rely on the days when things happen. Twice in one week doesn't usually happen to me, but here we are, and this one is for pretty important reasons. Anyway, let me jump back on the topic at hand. In fact, I'll tell you what, let me take some text messages first. I noticed that Kevin from Huntsville texted in. He said, one of the other challenges of women on the front line is if they get captured. The enemy's potential treatment of a female captive would put us in a negotiating position we don't want to be in. And we've seen that. And that is a thing, certainly. And look at what happened with the Hezbollah, the Hamas attacks on October 7th, a year and a half ago against Israel. Not everybody uses Geneva Conventions. Not everybody acts like a first world country. And so, yes, there are going to be times when that's also a consideration. Andrew from, and by the way, special operations, there are women in special operations. Don't kid yourselves. There are. But you're right, Kevin, you make a great point. Andrew from Tony, Alabama says, from what I understand, the U.S. Marines started training troops to cycle magazines during reloading the way Val Kilmer did in Heat during a firefight scene of the... That's kind of cool. I've never heard that, but that's interesting. I'll check that out. Kenan from Huntsville, Alabama says, my dear departed mother served in the Navy Waves in World War II. There you go. She was highly opposed to women serving in combat or being integrated to male units, even joining Phyllis Schlafly's fight to defeat the so-called Equal Rights Amendment. Well, thank you for your mother's service, first of all, both civilian and military. Kenan, thank you very much. Fritzy from Huntsville says, Colonel, clear monologue as normal. Missed you yesterday. Ammo, thank you. I appreciate that, Fritzy. Says, ammo and fuel don't care who's carrying them, just what they're getting carried, just that they're getting carried to where they're needed. 155mm M107 round with a fuse about 90 pounds. A can of 7.65 linked about 30 pounds. 5 gallons of diesel fuel about 35 pounds. Fritzy. You are so correct, sir. There will be times. There will be times. And then Scott from Athens says, make pioneer women great again. What? Says feminism and boss girls and the accommodation thereof has helicopter mommed this country. Signed, bold talk from a one-eyed fat guy, Scott. By the way, that's a line from one of my favorite movies of all time, True Grit. I caught it. All y'all should catch it. Rooster Cogburn. What do you aim to do, Rooster? I aim to see you in before the judge and force him or be hanged. Your choice. That's bold talk for a one-eyed fat man. Well, fill your hands. Okay, I can quote movies all day long, JP.
You've never seen that, right? That one, though. No.
You know what? We're going to have to watch True Grit. It's a rite of passage. We're going to have to make it happen.
I'll add it to the list.
Although I did show you that scene, didn't I?
Yeah. You showed me that one scene, and he ended up, you know, riding off on his horse while struggling. Yes, I did see that scene. Yes. You showed me to it.
Spin cocking that Winchester with the reins in his teeth and a Colt Peacemaker in the other hand. Yep.
Pretty epic.
True Grit. All right, so back on topic. Strong defense. Let's wrap this one. But there's other things besides that memo that are going on. Like, for instance, on the world stage right now, military strategists consider Russia is certainly a thing. It is. Let's not deny it. It is. But it's more of a thing in terms of what is happening with Russia. In a foreign policy standpoint, the settlement of the fight in Ukraine, but in terms of having a true near peer adversary, is what they call it in military strategy. They call this a near peer adversary. We don't have any direct peers. We are still the number one fighting force in the world, but our near peer is China. And Secretary of Defense Hegseth just got back. Piece on NBC News, Dateline 2 days ago. Secretary Hegseth just made a trip to Japan. And some of the things that are coming out, for those who don't follow military policy directly, they're missing out on this. This is a nuanced article, but when you read between the lines, you realize what just happened. So let me break this one down for you. Pete Hegseth says the U.S. is making Japan a warfighting base to deter China. There's our near-peer adversary. Hegseth's comments come as an assurance at a time when Japan has been worried about how the region might change under Donald Trump's America First policy. But Japanese officials heard a lot from Hegseth that gave them some peace, because China is growing. China's presence in the South China Sea, as against Taiwan, encroachments into other aspects of the Near East. They came into some agreements when he was in Japan. They agreed to help develop and produce additional AMRAAMs. That's the medium-range air-to-air missile, as well as surface-to-air missiles. They agreed to speed up the process of evolving maintenance of U.S. warships and warplanes in Japan to strengthen and basically complement the Japanese defense forces. They also, by the way, we have 50,000 U.S. service members there. They also agreed, and Hegseth announced, he's upgrading what's known as the command structure by putting what is known as a unified operational commander. What that basically means is it's now a warfighting headquarters. We're not just looking at it being a place where you have to maintain, billeting and maintenance of U.S. forces. It's not just a forward projection base now. putting a unified operational commander there, somebody who can command all operational forces in the theater in a combatant commander role is a significant step up in terms of operational capability. That just put in place that there will be a general or an admiral who has warfighting capability and unified command structure capability over all U.S. military forces stationed in Japan. Near peer adversary China, I guarantee you, is leaning forward looking at this one very carefully. The world doesn't always realize what just happened, but I can tell you right now, that's a significant move. And then you look at things like this one. Our own U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville. Piece here on Alabama Daily News. Senator Tuberville, who is chairman of the Armed Services Subcommittee on Personnel, is focused on improving the military academies by boosting enrollment and ridding them of diversity initiatives. What this basically means is Tuberville has taken it upon himself as being the chair of the Subcommittee on Personnel for Senate Armed Services to get the woke out of our West Point, out of our Naval Academy, out of the Air Force Academy, all of it. Basically, our service academies are going to get back to being mission-focused. And they are Ivy League educations, but they're going to have a mission focus that is not about diversity. It's not about wokeness. We're going to be training the next generation of military leaders. We're going to get back to the days that it was not just an honor to go to West Point, but it was absolutely a mission-focused education. So the superintendents from all the academies testified in front of him. And Tuberville said this. He said, over the last several years, the academies have lost sight of the fundamental reason for their existence, to commission officers with education required by their respective military branches. Tuberville said the academies have placed way too much emphasis on diversity, equity, and inclusion, even teaching critical race theory. And so the bottom line is, that's gone. Thank you, Alabama Senate. Can I have some applause for that? Do you have any applause for that? That's a worthy applause piece right there. That's huge. Yeah, I mean, listen, you got recruit. By the way, they're having trouble filling the billets at some of these academies too. It's not just recruiting for the ranks of the regular military. Even the service academies are having trouble filling out the ranks, or have been. But gone are those days. What we're looking at now is that the academies are going to get back to being mission focused. Superintendent of the military academy at West Point, Lieutenant General Steve Gilland, said, out of more than 600 classes, two were eliminated to comply with the order. In other words, what they had, and by the way, the Naval Academy had to cancel 18 classes. What does that mean? They were teaching, they had classes that were a part of the curriculum that are no longer allowed because of the DEI CRT rule changes. Can you imagine? The Naval Academy had to cancel 18 classes, or at least modify them, because they were teaching curriculum that is now banned in the effort to root. What does that tell you about where they were? It's unbelievable. But listen, what I'm loving the fact, though, is we're getting back to being mission-focused. We're getting back to being warfighters. We're getting back to having a military that will, you know, win friends and kill enemies, but it'll also break stuff and kill people, I'm telling you. And that's the way it should be. By the way, speaking of which, we have a commander-in-chief now who also gets his job. Piece on Red State, dated, was this 2 days ago? On Monday, President Trump took to his Truth Social account to count coup on, by the way, counting coup. You know what that is, JP, counting coup? You ever heard of that?
I do not, no.
Okay, I guess because I was I read a lot of Louis L'Amour books when I was growing up, a lot of cowboy books, a lot of mountain man books. Counting coup was something that I believe it was the Sioux Indians. They believed that if they could come up on you during the night while you were sleeping and leave a sign that they had been right next to you without taking your life, they had counted coup against you. And it was like saying, I was here, I could have killed you, but I chose not to. So there's that.
Interesting. That's a badass way to go about it, but yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
But the article says, I love this, he counted coup against Iran. Backed Houthi terrorists have been decimated by relentless airstrikes over the past 2 weeks. And Trump points out that it's going to continue, that they're going to do everything they can to completely dismantle Iran. But then he went on to say, basically, not just Iran, I'm sorry, the Houthis. But then he went on to tell Iran, and you better understand, this means you too. I mean, so this full article right now is a message that's rather explosive to the Houthis. He put them on absolute notice. We're going to keep wearing you out. He said, we hit them every night, day and night, harder and harder. Their capabilities that threaten shipping in the region are being destroyed. Our attacks will continue until they're no longer a threat. And the choice for the Houthis is clear, said President Trump. You stop shooting at U.S. ships, we stop shooting at you. Otherwise, we have only just begun, and the real pain is yet to come for both the Houthis and their sponsors in Iran. Nice to have a commander-in-chief that talks like a commander-in-chief, isn't it? How about that? JP, I've got to take a break, but I see that I got a caller. Make sure that caller can know if he will hold on to the break. I'll get him as soon as we come back. But right now, we got to take a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, let me go to the phones. Carl from Decatur held on. I appreciate his patience. So, hey, Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing fairly well, Phil. I just wanted to say I listen to you because you say and you have a platform to say what I would say if I had it. In other words,
you
think like I think, and that's the reason why I'm a conservative. So, but main thing about combat readiness, I was in the Army from 74 to 78, and under Gerald Ford, a lot of this stuff was just warming up with a lot of the females being involved in, you know, combat situations and stuff. But when I was stationed in Europe, the deal was no female was allowed to go on courtesy patrol. That is, ride around and in the neighborhoods and pick up the drunk soldiers and stuff like that. We were armed. You know, we had a staff sergeant. I was a buck sergeant. I had a specialist. All of us was armed during that time. And the deal was also that I bring attention to in that Cold War era was that the Russians, we could not touch them, but they could beat the hell out of us, and we couldn't do nothing but report it. And I didn't like that worth nothing. And so I saw when George Bush laid down the law what the troops could and could not do, and I had a couple of guys that was in the church. They had went to Iraq and Afghanistan, and they didn't like what was going on, and they almost got killed in their service time. But, you know, I thank God for all of the guys that have served, the ones that are maimed. And, you know, I didn't get the chance to listen to all what you were saying because I was trying to get a wheelchair for myself because I have a disability, just, you know, from that. But at any rate, I just wanted to chime in and say the women, they have their place. But, you know, in your monologue, you were spot on, man. I mean, I went to NCO Academy. Let me say this, and then I'll quit. I went to NCO Academy, and two women made me fail. And that was because of it. The exercise that they put before me, they didn't want to do it. And the guys that was grading me told me, hey, look, you know, you were supposed to make them women do what the other guys were supposed to do. They didn't want to get in the water was what it was about. And so I was thinking, you know, this is a bad thing, whereas, you know, you have men are more protective of women. I saw all of that during the time I was in. So, you know, I'm thankful that somebody got some sense like Pete Hexett to set the record straight and try to put us on a footing to whereas the Army does what it does. That's break things and tear up things and kill people. Who are
getting our way of Sergeant living. Carl, Sergeant Carl, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for your service to our nation and for still having a Right Side Ruffian attitude. But buck sergeants rule the Army. We all know it. But thank you for what you did.
Well, thank you for being who you are and doing what you do.
All right, brother. You have a great day. Okay. Thanks so much. Well, listen, I mean, wow. I tell you what. You want to change the world? Put a buck sergeant in charge. You're gonna get there. And by the way, if you really want to make something happen, take an E4, put hard corporal stripes on him, and just turn him loose. But anyway, Carl, thanks for the call very much. Appreciate you. Hey, I'll end with this: strong defense. You know, we think about the near peer adversaries like China. We think about things happening out there about, you know, what we're doing, readiness in our forces. Do not lose sight of this, though. Real Clear Defense has an article that says Hezbollah is actually on our southern doorstep. We have massive input from the RAND Corporation showing that Hezbollah has networks all over South America, and they have been attempting to do things even on our southern border regions. And so strong defense, we better have it for the homeland as well as abroad. All right, did I hear music playing, JP? I can't hardly hear it. Am I hearing it?
Yes, you are.
It is playing. We're going to a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.